Podmates, this is Ori, and welcome to episode 3 of OrcaPod, a deep dive into DeFi from the builder's perspective. I'm one of the co-founders of Orca, the most user-friendly DEX on Solana. This episode, I'm super excited to welcome the inimitable Nas Adaya, one of our advisors at E to the I Ventures. Welcome, Nas.
Hi, Ori. So happy to be here.
So this is actually our first external guest that we're inviting onto the podcast. So I was wondering if you could tell our guests a little about your background and why you know so much about tokenomics.
Sure thing. And I definitely appreciate you taking the time to have me on the Orca podcast. And my background is a professional trader and market maker with experience in quantitative cryptocurrency trading and fundamental DeFi investing. So I began my career on the commodity trading side, including trading natural gas as well as crude oil. And then I transitioned into cryptocurrency. So I've worked with various projects to make markets on centralized as well as decentralized exchanges. And given the nature of how crypto evolved, as we got more towards the summer of 2020, what we noticed was that there's this proliferation of DeFi. And it really started with Compound Finance and then later on Wi-Fi. And being early to these protocols really got me excited about how to structure token economic incentives within an ecosystem that is flourishing. And that eventually transitioned into working with my co-founder Shrikar on EIV, which is a startup decentralized finance incubator.
Amazing. Yeah, we feel really lucky to have all of your experience guidance when it comes to tokenomics and everything related. Speaking of which, we actually have a pretty funny story in terms of how we met. Do you want to fill in the listeners?
Sure thing. The story goes like this. So Yi Sun, who is our advisor at EIV, is friends with Brian Gu. And Brian Gu is the founder of Dark Forest. And he was within the same cohort as Yutaro and Ori in a Mozilla incubator. And essentially, Yutaro and Ori were looking for feedback on how to structure DeFi products as well as incentive structures. And I was introduced to them through this channel. This was maybe around summer of 2020. And since then, it's been a really dynamic relationship, meaning that everyone at EIV and everyone at Orca gets along really well. And that naturally transitioned into a more formal advisory relationship in 2021. And it's been a great experience to interact with Orca as they've grown.
Yeah. So those of you who listened to our first episode might actually remember us referencing Mozilla Builders, the incubator that Yutaro and I participated in together and for which we built Wallaroo, the high interest savings app built on Ethereum. But this story really shines a light on how serendipitous these connections are and really how small the crypto world is for me. Like, Yutaro had actually already been a fan of Dark Forest, the game, before we met Brian Gu through Mozilla Builders, as well as a fan of Dark Forest, the book. And so, yeah, I guess to me, it really is quite magical. Once you get into crypto, it does feel like everyone knows each other. And we are super grateful to have been connected to Nas during that time. But in any case, moving on to the main topic of today. So Nas, you've been advising Orca in many ways now, but one of the ones that I think will be most interesting to our listeners is how exactly you've shaped our tokenomics for the upcoming Orca token to create true value for both users of the protocol and token holders. And one thing that I'd like to highlight is that Nas has a really rare combination of skills in crypto, where he has deep knowledge of DeFi and yet is really good at breaking down difficult concepts in a way that's easy to understand. So I'm excited for you to share that with our listeners today.
Definitely.
Jumping right into it. So what does the word tokenomics mean to you, and why does it matter?
That's a great question. Token economics refers to how a project drives economic value within an application, and especially within DeFi more recently. And it matters for a variety of reasons. It matters because of the ability to govern, the ability to generate fees, and to distribute those fees amongst the different participants within a protocol. And through the lens of driving user engagement and stickiness, it really makes sense to pay particular attention to how the token economics are structured and to understand the different parties that are involved within an ecosystem. So to give an example, let's say that we're looking at an automated market maker. Within the ecosystem of an AMM, there are traders, there are liquidity providers and there are also token holders. And to use an example that might be familiar to the audience, let's actually look at Uniswap specifically. So you have traders that are trading on, let's just say, Uniswap V2 or V3, and they want to transact in order to exchange one token for another. And they have expectations about liquidity as well as slippage. Whereas a liquidity provider might have expectations about how much yield that they're earning by providing liquidity and what is the opportunity cost of having liquidity on Uniswap versus other competing platforms such as SushiSwap. Furthermore, the last bucket of users would be the actual token holders. These might be VCs or there might be people that purchase the token on a secondary market. And they may also have future expectations about how the fee distribution within Uniswap may evolve over time. So if you recall, the competitor to Uniswap, which is SushiSwap, actually turned on fees quite early in the protocol. And this may be an expectation that Uniswap token holders would also have for the future of Uniswap.
Got it. Yeah, I think that's a great example of how tokenomics can be used to effectively incentivize the different stakeholders in a system. So I'm actually curious then if you could provide an example that's maybe not so effective when it comes to tokenomics design.
Definitely. This might resonate with some of the DeFi, DeGen, yield farmers, but there was this sort of craze of algo stablecoins that occurred in around December, I would call it December 2020 to the first couple months of 2021. And there was this proliferation of projects, including Dynamic Set Dollar, Basis Cash, Mithril Cash, and there were all sorts of forks of each other to some degree. And they followed a very similar playbook, meaning that you had these very high emissions for early users. And if you had an early stake, you could compound at these sort of insane rates, right? Like we're talking thousands of APY. And what ended up happening was that you had this unsustainable Ponzi where people were drawn into the protocol, but they didn't necessarily understand how the rebalancing mechanisms work with the minting of these shares within the protocol. So it's beyond the scope of this conversation to discuss sort of the specifics. However, the overarching idea is that the emissions were unsustainable from a token economics perspective, and they ultimately led to users being burnt, meaning that if you came in later to the protocol, you are likely buying in at a price for these tokens that actually may have exceeded a dollar for these algo stablecoins, meaning that you were improperly incentivized to actually continue participating in this protocol if the price went down. So this actually led to a lot of participants giving up on these protocols and essentially selling at a loss and creating this sort of death spiral. So that's an example of sort of a ecosystem that didn't necessarily have a great time. And unfortunately today, some of these projects are actually abandoned, meaning that there's very little liquidity for these protocols on exchanges. And some of the devs seem very disengaged from the actual platforms themselves. On the other hand, you could look at a project like SushiSwap. So SushiSwap has a very interesting story where they initially had high emissions to bootstrap the liquidity initially. However, they recognized that by having too high emissions, you might misalign the incentives between the liquidity providers and other economic participants, such as the token holders. So what they did is that they actually tapered off the rewards and they started to create a menu of tokens that had emissions. And they also introduced a vesting schedule, meaning that if you're providing liquidity, you don't necessarily get the tokens all up front. You would have to either continue participating in the protocol or you would have sort of delayed reception of these tokens. So what this essentially means is that Sushi could focus on more of the day-to-day rather than focusing on attracting users through these high emissions. So as a protocol matures, the tokenomics also matures. So through these examples, you could see sort of how protocols must carefully balance the stakeholders in order to achieve the intended results.
Yeah, the Sushi use case is really fascinating to me because Sushi has been aiming to be decentralized from the beginning. But obviously, there needs to be someone actually designing the tokenomics from the beginning, right? How do you think they struck that balance in terms of, well, just who has power?
I believe that the way that they thought about it was that if you look at the initial distribution of tokens, a lot of the initial participants were liquidity providers who saw sushi as merely yield. And they were the ones that were potentially selling the token. And as people realize that there's actually decentralized hires that are meaningful, and you have a protocol that can really rival Uniswap, a lot of participants that are more fundamental minded in investing actually accumulated SushiSwap, and they drove a lot of the governance decisions that make Sushi what it is today, meaning that they were driving values that they thought were valuable. And this sort of led to Sushi having a position where it is actually quite sustainable, and they can introduce programs that are meaningful with token holders that are value aligned, meaning that they can offer even initial Sushi offerings and integrate across a variety of different decentralized finance verticals. And I think that without experiencing sort of a little bit of hardship early on, you wouldn't really get to that result, because they recognized the hardship. And then some of these more DeFi fundamental minded folks came in, and they were able to help position Sushi within the ecosystem and evolve in a way where the token economics were more balanced, and that they could also introduce additional products.
Right. Yeah, this is definitely something that I want Orca to learn from, given that we do want to decentralize along an approximately 3-year timeline. So I think we could easily spend all day looking at these past use cases and picking them apart. But since we don't have too much time today, I think this is a pretty natural transition to another question I want to ask you, which is about the Orca tokens tokenomics. So how exactly did you approach designing the Orca token?
A lot of the design was drawn through previous automated market makers and how they designed their ecosystems, and primarily Uniswap and SushiSwap. And the basic idea is to reward early liquidity providers where most of the risk was taken, meaning that these were the participants that were initially bootstrapping liquidity. And then to also look at how individual participants are trading on the platform and what behaviors they might have. So it could be the case that, let's say that Orca was doing a promotion where they have a collectible. It could be the case that some of the trading activity was temporary or inspired to get the collectible, and looking sort of at the steady state of what is trading activity like on Orca naturally, and adjusting for how these different promotions may have played out. So that entails designing airdrops that are intelligently structured as to achieve the goals of the protocol, including decentralization over the period that Ori described, which is around 3 years. And furthermore, to encourage a healthy amount of participation on the liquidity provision side, it also makes sense to sort of have this, even if it's an informal committee, where you gather together, make decisions about how the protocol is changing their emissions on a regular schedule, right? It could be every 2 weeks. And as the protocol becomes more and more decentralized, this naturally is driven more by the token holders. But the way that I like to phrase things is that the team and advisors can help to set the initial conditions, but down the line, it's truly the token holders and the market participants that are ultimately gaining control. And we can learn from our past experiences to best position Orca so that it is driving meaningful value within the AMM and Solana ecosystem.
Yeah, we really are part of this new experiment. I think that's something that your comments really shine a light on as well, in that, you know, we can look back on a few examples, but we're in a new ecosystem here in Solana. Orca is a slightly different product in a couple of ways, and I think that's something that you'll hear about in future episodes as well. But I know I'm really looking forward to seeing how things play out, because we can do the best that we can to try to encourage the intended effects. But as governance rolls out on Solana, and as we roll out new features, the balance in our community will change. So it's an unknown unknown, but one that I think is really exciting.
Definitely. I really agree there, because if you look at the Solana ecosystem right now, everything has to be built from scratch. Like it's not an EVM compatible chain. So you have projects that are really building from the ground up. And given that there are not necessarily a lot of AMMs on Solana, it's very critical that Orca can establish itself as sort of this first or second mover and really capture an audience that will drive value to Solana over a long period of time.
Yeah, just building on that, what are you personally most excited about when it comes to Orca's future and the future of the Solana ecosystem as a whole, Nas? I'm curious if your background is in trading and also in incubating gives you a different perspective than the other folks who we might have normally on OrcaPod.
There are a variety of aspects that I'm very excited about with regard to Orca and Solana. For Orca specifically, one thing that really resonates with me is that the team is highly experienced. They've also grown really fast and they're highly competent across different areas, whether it's marketing, whether it's UI UX, and whether it's protocol design. And what I've seen, having advised Orca throughout a period of time, the Orca team really drives innovation in the products that they have in their roadmap, whether it's the stable swap, whether it's the Solar Bridge, which is linking Ethereum assets to Solana, or whether it's innovating with respect to concentrated liquidity, which is largely inspired by Uni V3. And Yutaro and Ori have a great mindset for synthesizing different features about the market and creating roadmaps in which Orca can drive value to Solana users. And given that we are in the early stages of Solana, Orca is in a really great position to also drive composability. And I think that that's actually what I'm excited about with respect to Orca and Solana, where you can, like, let's say that there's theoretical aggregator that's built for the Solana ecosystem. It's an aggregator that could route through Orca, it could route through Radium. And given that Orca is building features across a diverse Solana ecosystem, it really just drives home the composable nature of DeFi. And that's what I'm particularly excited about, right? That you can have trades that are routed through Mercurial, through Orca's stable swap, through Saber. And Orca is sort of positioned so that it has some surface area in all these different verticals across Solana. So I could see it being very symbiotic and have staying power as the years progress.
Nice. Yeah, the SDK that we're actually working on now is something that I think we'll really be able to really speed up our ability to integrate with other products. And so that's something that I'm also really excited to see play out in the Solana ecosystem. But I think I speak for everyone on the Orca team, especially myself and Yutaro, when we say that we feel really lucky to have you in our corner collaborating on these initiatives, because I think we have the chance to really set the direction of where the Solana ecosystem goes. And I think we've spent a lot of time talking about this in previous podcasts, but it's been really pleasant to see how positive the community is and how everyone, for the most part, is aligned on creating true value. So that's all that we have time for today. So to all our loyal listeners, thank you so much for tuning into OrcaPod. You can check us out on Twitter at @Orca_SO or join our Discord or Telegram through the link in the show notes. Nas, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a splash.
Thanks, Ori. I really appreciate it.
All right. And to our listeners, we'll have another episode hopefully coming out soon. So till the next high tide.